Osho, the invitation responses to disciples' questions given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 27.
Beloved Bhagwan, I am also getting old. Would you tell me a few laws of middle age also?
Everybody is getting old. The day you were born, since then, you have been getting old. Each moment, each day. Childhood is a flux, so is youth. Just old age never ends, because it terminates. That is the unique quality of old age, that it brings you to ultimate rest. But you want few laws of middle age. You are a man of medicine. You should know better. As far as I am concerned, I have never been a child, never a youth, and never become old, and never will die. I know only one thing in me, that is absolutely unchanging and eternal. But just for your sake, there are many laws about middle age, because all over the world people become old. And many thinkers have been thinking, what is this old age? The first lies the never's last law. Obviously, about old age, the law can be the last. Never speculate on that which can be known for certain. You know perfectly well you are getting old. Now don't speculate on that. That will make you more miserable. The law is beautiful. Never speculate on that which can be known for certain. In fact, in life, except death, nothing is certain. Everything can be speculated upon, but not on death. And old is just the door to death. Middle age is when you begin to exchange your emotions for symptoms. Lendl's law. You know you are getting old when a girl calls no and all you feel is relief. Old age is when you start to turn out the lights for economical rather than romantic reasons. Old age is that period of life when your idea of getting ahead is staying even. Old age is when you can do just as much as ever, but would rather not. Old days is a mysterious experience. But all these laws have been found by the Western mind. In the East, I have not been able to discover anybody in the whole literature of the East talking about old age. On the contrary, old age has been praised immensely. Because in the East it has been taught that you are not old. If your life has simply moved on the horizontal line, you are only aged. But if your life, your consciousness has moved vertically upwards, then you have attained the beauty, the glory of old age. Old age in the East has been synonymous with wisdom. But man can go, these are the two paths. One is horizontal, from childhood to youth to old and to death. And another is vertical, from childhood to youth to old age and to immortality. The difference of quality in both the dimensions is immense. Incalculable. The man who simply becomes young and old and dead, has remained identified with his body. He has not known anything about his being. Because being is never born and never dies. It is always, it has been always, it will be always. It is whole eternity. On the vertical line, the child becomes young, but the youth on vertical line will be different than the youth on the horizontal line. Childhood is innocent. But that is the point from where these two different dimensions open up. The youth on the horizontal line is nothing but sensuality, sexuality, and all kinds of other stupidity. The youth on the vertical line is a search for truth, is a search for life, it is a longing to know oneself. A man on the vertical line cannot be called young if he is not meditative. And the same is true about old age. On the horizontal line, the old age is simply trembling, afraid of death. It cannot think anything except a graveyard and darkness which goes on becoming darker and darker. It cannot conceive himself except as a skeleton. But on the vertical line, old age is a celebration. It is as beautiful as man has never been, because youth is a little foolish. It's bound to be. It is inexperienced. But the old age has passed through all the experiences, good and bad, right and wrong, and has come to a stage where it is no more affected by anything concerned with body or mind. And it is a welcome. The old age on the vertical line is keeping its door open for the ultimate guest to come in. It is not an end, it is a beginning of a real life, of an authentic being. Hence I make continuously the distinction of growing old and of growing up. Very few people have been fortunate to grow up. the remaining humanity has been only growing old. And naturally they are all moving towards death. Only on the vertical line death does not exist. That is the way to immortality, to divinity, and naturally when one becomes old on that dimension, he has a grace and a beauty and a compassion and love. It has been noted again and again, there is a statement in Buddhist scriptures that as Buddha became older, he became more beautiful. This I call true miracle, not walking on water. Any drunkard can try that. Not turning water into wine. Any criminal can do that. This is true miracle. Buddha became more beautiful than he was in his young age. He became more innocent than he was in his childhood. This is growth. Unless you are moving on the vertical line, you are missing the whole opportunity of life. But here our whole effort is to block the horizontal line and open the blocked vertical line. Then every day you are coming more closer to life, not farther away. Then your birth is not the beginning of death, your birth is the beginning of eternal life. Just two different lines and so much difference. But the West has never thought about it. The vertical line has never been mentioned. Because they don't have been brought up in a spiritual atmosphere where the real riches are inside you. Even if they think of God, they think of Him outside. Gautam Buddha could deny God. I deny God. Absolutely there is no God. For the simple reason, because we want you to turn inwards. If God is or anything similar, it has to be found inside you. It has to be found in your own eternity, in your own ecstasy. But to think oneself body, mind, structure, is the most dangerous idea that has happened to people. that destroys their whole grace, whole beauty, and they are constantly trembling and afraid of death. And trying to keep old age as away as possible. In the West, if you say to an old woman that you look so young, and she knows she is no more young, she stands before the mirror for hours to check whether any youth has remained anywhere. But she will not deny, she will be immensely happy. In the East, nobody says to an old woman that you are young. On the contrary, the old age is so respected, so loved, that to say somebody that you look younger than your age is a kind of insult. I am reminded of one incident that happened in my life. I was staying in Chanda, a far corner of Maharashtra, in a very rich family. And they were very much interested in an astrologer. And they loved me. I used to go at least 3 times per year. That was their quota. And I used to stay there at least for 3-4 days each time. Once I went there, they had arranged with the astrologer to come and to look at my hands and tell things about me without asking me. When I came to know about it, everything was fixed. The astrologer was sitting in the sitting room. So I said, okay, let us enjoy that too. I showed him my hand. He pondered over it. And he said, you must be at least 80 years old. Of course, one of the daughters of the rich man freaked out that this is a stupid, what kind of astrology? Because at that time I was not more than 35. Even a blind man could have measured 35 and 80. She was really angry. And she told me that I'm finished with this astrologer. What else he can know? I said, you don't understand. You are more westernized, educated on the western style. You have been to the west. for your education. You can't understand what he was saying. He said what he was saying. It was so clear, there is no need to understand. He was simply showing his stupidity. A 35-year-old young man, and he is saying that you are 80 years old. I said, be patient. And I told her a story about immersion. A man asked immersion, how old you are? Immersion said, near about 360 years. The man could not believe. And he has always been believed in immersion that he is a man of truth. What has happened? A slip of the tongue? Or he has become senile? Or he is joking? But to make things clear, he said, I did not hear what you said. Just tell me how much. He said, you have heard it, 360 years. The man said, I cannot believe it. You don't look more than 60 years. Emerson said, you are right in a way, on the vertical. I am 360, and on the horizontal I am 60. Perhaps he is the first Western man to use this Eastern expression of horizontal and vertical. He was immensely interested in the East, and he has few glimpses which bring him closer to the seers of Upanishad. He said, actually, I have lived 60 years, you are right. But I have lived in 60 years as much as you will not be able even to live in 360 years. I have lived 6 times more. The vertical line does not count years. It counts your experiences. And on the vertical line is the whole treasure of existence. Not only immortality, not only a feeling of divineness, but first experience of love without hate. First experience of compassion. First experience of meditation. First experience of a tremendous explosion of enlightenment. It is not a coincidence that in the West the word enlightenment does not have the same meaning as in the East. They call that after the Black Ages, Dark Ages, came the age of enlightenment. They call a people like Bertrand Russell, Jean-Paul Sartre, Jaspers, that these are very enlightened geniuses. They don't understand that they are misusing a word, degrading it into the mud. Neither Bertrand Russell is enlightened, nor Jean-Paul Sartre, nor Jaspers. Enlightenment does not happen on the horizontal. Even in his old age, Jean-Paul Sartre was still running after a young girl. Bertrand Russell changed his wife so many times, and he lived long on the horizontal, almost a century. But even in his old age, his interests were as stupid as young people. The East understands the word of enlightenment has nothing to do with genius, has nothing to do with intelligence. It has something to do with discovering your real, authentic being. It is discovering God within you. Amrito, you need not be worried about laws. Those laws are all on the horizontal line. On the vertical line, there is love, no law. There is growing experience of becoming more and more spiritual and less physical, more and more meditative and less mind, more and more divine and less this trivial material world in which we are so much enmeshed. On the vertical line, slowly you feel desires disappearing, sensuality disappearing, sexuality disappearing, ambitions disappearing, will to power disappearing. Your slavery in all its aspects disappearing, religious, political, national, you are becoming more an individual, and with your individuality growing clear and luminous, the whole humanity is becoming one in your eyes. You cannot discriminate. There are great experiences on the vertical line. On the horizontal line, there is only decline. On the horizontal line, the old man lives in the past. He thinks of those beautiful days, those Arabian nights when he was young. He thinks also of those beautiful days when there was no responsibility and he was a child, running after butterflies. In fact, his whole life he has been running after butterflies. Even in the old age, Mullah Nasruddin was passing through a street and he saw a beautiful young woman . So he gave her a good nudge. The woman was soft because Mullah was old. All his hairs were pure silver white. The woman said that you should be ashamed. All your hairs are pure white. You are of the age of my grandfather. You should have been dead by now. And you are showing your ugliness. Mullah said, listen, my hairs are white, that's true, but my heart is still black, dark black. On the horizontal line, that's what happens. Your hairs will become white, but you don't become white. In fact, on the contrary, as you grow old, you become more and more infatuated by desires. Because now you know ahead is only death. So enjoy as much as possible. Although enjoying becomes difficult, physically you have lost the energy. So the old man on the horizontal line becomes cerebral sexual. He is continuously thinking of sex. Psychologists have been watching thousands of people and they have concluded that every man thinks of a woman at least once in 3 minutes. You just check it. That will show you on what line you are, horizontal or vertical. And each woman thinks of man one time in 7 minutes. That is the difference that creates conflict. The moment the husband comes and asks, dear, what about it? And she says, I am having a headache. Don't torture me anymore. Because the difference is, she thinks only one time in 7 minutes, that means one day in 7 days, And the man thinks one time in 3 minutes. That is average. In old age, those 3 minutes shrink into 1 minute. The old man has nothing else to do to think. And what else is there to think? He imagines beautiful women. One day Mullah Nasruddin was sitting on his balcony watching the beautiful sunset, and suddenly he shouted to his servant that, bring my glasses quick. Servant said, what calamity has happened? He brought his glasses, and Mullah said, you idiot, when I see quick, it means quick. We missed the opportunity. The servant said, I don't understand, what opportunity? He said, such a beautiful woman was going by, but my eyes can't figure out whether she is a woman or a man, whether she is really beautiful or I am imagining. Glasses were needed. And by the time you have brought glasses, she has gone. The servant said, you are under wrong impression. She was not a woman. He is my brother who has come to see me. Nobody else has passed. The old man is continuously thinking of the past. This is the psychology. The child thinks of the future because he has no past. There is no question of thinking of the past. No yesterday. He thinks of days to come. The whole long life, 70 years, gives him a space. He wants to become quickly big enough to do things what all big people are doing. The old man has no future. Future means death. He does not want even to talk about future. Future gives him a trembling. Future means grave. He talks about the past. And the same is true about countries. For example, a country like India never thinks of the future. That means it has become old. It is symptomatic. It always thinks of the past. It always goes on playing the life of Rama and Sita. For centuries, the same story. Every village is making a drama. It always goes on thinking of Buddha and Mahavira and Adinatha and Rig Veda and Upanishad. Everything has passed. Now the country is simply waiting to die. There is no future. according to Indian idea, and that is the idea of the old mentality, the mind of the old man, the best age was millions of years ago. It was called Satyuga, the age of truth. Then man started falling. You can see the psychological parallel. There are four ages: the childhood, the young man, the middle age, the old man. According to these four, he has projected four ages for life itself. The first age was innocent, just like a child. Very balanced. They give the example that it has, just like a table, four legs, perfectly balanced, and then decline starts. In India, the idea of evolution has never existed. But on the contrary, the opposite idea. The word is not even used in the West. You may not have even heard of the word. But that's what India has been thinking. It is involution, not evolution. We are shrinking. We are falling down. In the second stage of fall, one leg is lost. The table becomes a tripod. Although it is still balanced, but not that much as it was with four legs. In the third stage, it loses another leg. Now it is standing only on two legs, absolutely unbalanced. And this is the fourth state. Even two legs are not available. You are standing on one leg. How long you can stand? The first age is called Satyuga, the age of truth. The second is simply named by the number Treta. The third, because only three legs are left. The third is called Dwapar. Again, only the number Dwa is exactly what in English is two. This two comes from Sanskrit Dwa. Moving through many other languages, it became Stwa, and then finally it became Stu. And the fourth age, they have called Kali Yuga, the age of darkness. We are living in age of darkness. This is the mind of the old man. Ahead there is only darkness and nothing else. The child thinks of the future, of the golden future. The old man thinks of the golden past. But this happens only on the horizontal line. On the vertical line, the past is golden, the present is golden, the future is golden. It is the life of tremendous celebration. So rather than being worried about the loss of old age, think on which line your train is moving. It is still time to change the trains. It is always time to change the trains, because from every moment that bifurcation is available, you can shift. Shift from the horizontal to the vertical, that is only what is important.
Beloved Bhagwan, can you say something again about coming to the Master and going back to the world?
Again? Chetan Dhyan. It seems you have heard it before. Where you have been that time? And are you certain you will be able to hear this time? I can say, in fact, I am saying everything again and again and again. But you are not ever at home, so you don't know. You think I am saying every day new things. From where I can get new things? I have stopped reading for 12 years. I have not touched a single book. I don't meet people, so I can't gather gossips or gospels. I don't go anywhere. I just talk to you and go to sleep. In sleep, do you think I can find new things every day? And my sleep is dreamless, contentless, just a pure silence. It is another name of meditation to me. Just Nirvana takes care that once in a while I should sleep, because otherwise the body suffers. Otherwise the whole night I am awake. And I have divided the day in two parts. Because there is nothing to read. I have read so much, and now I am utterly bored when I come to see books. I already know that these idiots, what they will be writing. And there is no other source. The only thing is that you feel what I am saying new is that you never heard it before. You have been here. But I will not refuse your question. I will repeat it again. But before I say anything about it, to wake you up, I will tell you a story. I use stories and jokes to keep you awake. If I start talking philosophy purely, there will be complete silence and people will start snoring. For centuries, people have been snoring whenever religion, spirituality, philosophy, meditation were taught. And all great masters have been in immense agony because of their compassion. What to do with these people? But I have found a way. There is no need to say to you, wake up. I simply tell you a joke. When I see now, you are sleeping in sleep. Then you just straighten up, open your eyes, look all around. I don't allow anybody to snore. A man from Warsaw, in Chelm, on a business trip, was walking down the street when he was stopped by Yosel, the chimney sweep. Zalman, cried Yosel, what has come of you? It is so long since I have seen you. Just look at yourself. But wait, replied the stranger. Never mind that, said yourself. I can't get over how much you have changed. You used to be such a big man, built like an ox. And now you are smaller than I am. Have you been sick? But wait, replied the stranger, never mind that, said yourself. And what has become of your hair? You used to have a fine head of black hair, and now you are completely bald. What has happened? You know, I don't see how I ever recognized you. Zalman, what has become of you? I have been trying to tell you. The man replied, I am not Zalman. I replied yourself, you have gone and changed your name as well. If one does not want to listen, what to do? He will find some way out. Your question is beautiful. You ask, can you say something again about coming to the Master and going back to the world? The moment you have found a master, wherever you are, the master will be with you. Because finding the master means drinking from his well, finding the master means becoming yourself. So attuned with the master, so in akar to such a deep harmony that you appear only two, but you have become one. The bodies are two, but the inner flames of your life have become one. Once you have found the master, there is no way to go anywhere where you can be without the master. If going to the world you find yourself alone without the master, that simply means only one thing: without any doubt, you have not found the master yet. There is a beautiful story about Mahakashyapa, one of the most significant disciples of Gautam Buddha, perhaps just second to him, or maybe just equal to him. But he never asked any question. He never bothered Buddha about any problem. Finally, Buddha became concerned, what is the matter? Everybody is asking, everybody is receiving the answer, and this Mahakashyapa never asked anything. And if he does not ask, there is no point to answer him. And what you are going to answer? He called Mahakashyapa. With tears he came to him and he said, the only thing is that I am afraid of enlightenment. Buddha said, you are a stranger. Why you have left your kingdom and you have become a sannyasin and now you are afraid of enlightenment? He said, that's that's why I don't ask anything. Because I am afraid if I become enlightened, you will send me away to spread the message, the word. I have been seeing those people who have become enlightened have been sent away, and I cannot live a single moment without you. Just leave me alone. I don't want any enlightenment. I just want to be with you. And I can be with you only if I am unenlightened. Once I am enlightened, I know you will send me. Buddha said, I promise you, I will not send you, but just out of that fear, don't prevent yourself from enlightenment. You don't know what it is. Because of the promise of Gautam Buddha, Mahakashyap became enlightened the second day. Because all this time he was becoming silent, peaceful, no question, no answers. The chattering of the mind has gone away. For 20 years he has been sitting in deep closeness with Buddha. And his love for him was so much that he was ready to drop the idea of enlightenment. Very few disciples you will find who will be ready to drop the idea of enlightenment. They will say, this is stupid. For enlightenment we have come to a master, and then for the master we drop the idea of enlightenment. It does not make sense. But once Buddha promised him, the next day he became enlightened. And Buddha called him Mahakashyapa. Now you have to go and spread the word. Mahakashyapa said, and what about your promise? Buddha said, a promise was given to an unenlightened man. You are no more the same man. That man is gone. To you I have never given any promise. Mahakashyapa said, that's true. That man is gone. But be kind enough. Forget about the promise, because you are tricky. You are getting out of it. Let me be here. But Buddha said, what you will be doing here? You don't know that once you have become enlightened, wherever you are, I am with you. I am you. What is the difference between my enlightenment and your enlightenment? Just a day before you were an unlit candle. Today you have your own flame. And the flame is the same. Today you are a Buddha yourself. Mahakashyap touched his feet and said, I will go. But just allow me one thing. Wherever I am, I can bow down towards your direction and touch the feet will not be there, but I can touch the ground and kiss the ground. This much you will have. To allow me, Buddha said, I can allow you, there is no harm in it. But what others will think? They will think you are crazy. First you are going to talk about meditation, enlightenment, they will think you are a little strange, and when they will see you kissing the earth and touching the earth, with your head putting on the earth, then it will become certain to them that you are really mad. Mahakashyapa said, that you can leave up to me. That is my problem. You should not interfere in it. First you tricked me into enlightenment. For 20 years I was so happy. Now I am more happy and more blissful. For 20 years I was happy in spite of my ignorance. Now I am happy, simply happy. There is no ignorance. There is no darkness. I am grateful to you. I know you are within me now. But whatever the world thinks, I will continue to touch your feet, at least from far away, just in your direction. And he continued his whole life. People were amazed seeing him every morning, every evening, that what do you do? But he was such a luminous figure, nobody could think that he was mad. In fact, they have never seen such a man of genius, intelligence, awareness, love, compassion, blissfulness. 24 hours in ecstasy. So they could not think that he is mad. But what he is doing? He said, I bow down to my master's feet. He must be 1,000 miles away, just in the direction. I cannot forget the gratitude towards him. If he had not tricked me, I would have remained unenlightened forever. Just for me to become enlightened, my master was even ready to lie. He promised me, knowing perfectly well that he is not going to keep his promise, and he is a man of word. I have never seen him going against his word, but his compassion was so much, and his love was so much. How can I forget him? It does not matter where he is. I can bow down in gratitude morning and evening, and that is my most precious time. I am blissful, I am ecstatic, I am enlightened. But I want you to know, he said to people again and again, that even my great ecstasy is less then the ecstasy I feel when I bow down to my master. Whatever I am is his compassion and nothing else. Chetan Dhyan, you need not be worried if you have found the master in me. Then wherever you are, you will find me very close, nearby, just following you like a shadow. But if you get lost into the world, that will also be a good experience to understand that you have not found the master. In any case, these are the only two alternatives. Either you will find me in your gratitude, in your love, in your peace, in your silence, in your meditations, in your joy, or you will forget about me in the crowd. In both the ways, it will be a beautiful experience and a beautiful test. I want everybody here, those who are essential to run the commune, should remain here. Otherwise, people should come and go. They can manage for 3 months here to be 3 months and go back into the world. The day you can start finding me wherever you are, is the greatest day of your life.
Beloved Master, loving to hear you laugh, loving your jokes, loving you. Beloved Master, would you speak to us about laughter?
Anand Swabhava. When you are hungry, you don't want somebody to speak on food. When you are in a river drowning, you don't want somebody else to talk about the art of swimming. There are right moments and right situations, and there are things which can be talked about yet misunderstood. Laughter is a mystery. It is better to experience it than to hear about it. But one becomes curious, what is laughter? Laughter is the most intelligent factor in you. Buffaloes don't laugh. And if you meet a buffalo laughing, you will go mad. Then it will be impossible to bring you to sanity. No animal laughs. Laughter needs a very sensitive intelligence. It means that you can understand the ridiculousness of a certain situation. What are jokes? They are a very clever arrangement. They take you in a direction logically, rationally, you start expecting that now this is going to happen, this is going to happen, and it goes on happening according to your expectations. Then comes a sudden turn. And something happens which you could have never imagined. That brings laughter to you. It is a very internal process of your rational expectation. If what you were expecting happens, there will be no laugh. But if you see something that you could not have conceived, and everything went well up to the end, and then suddenly something happens, that you immediately forget all your reason, logic, mind. Laughter is the only ordinary experience when you are no more a mind. And I use it to give you glimpses of no mind, of meditation, of a transcendence of mind. Perhaps I am the first man in the whole history of mankind who has been using jokes as a preparation for meditation. Jesus would not laugh. Buddha would not laugh. Lao Tzu is not heard to ever laugh. They were serious people, and they were doing a serious work. It will be good to understand a small incident which began the tradition of Zen. Those are the people who understand, only people on the earth. A small stream who have understood the meaning of laughter, because their origin is in laughter. It was again Mahakashyapa. He was sitting under his tree. Because he was sitting under his tree for 20 years, it has become almost his tree. Nobody else used to sit under that tree. Everybody knew that that is the place for Mahakashyapa, and don't disturb that man. He never asks, he never says anything, he never talks. Why disturb him? Just leave him alone. It has become an accepted fact. But one day he laughed. And that day was his day of enlightenment. A great king, Prasenjita, asked his wife, because his wife was a disciple of Gautama Buddha, a lay disciple, not a sannyasin, but immensely interested in Gautama Buddha and hoping that one day her husband will allow her to become a sannyasin. He was not interested in sannyas. He was interested in increasing his kingdom bigger and bigger. He was always fighting, invading new areas. By chance, Buddha had come into the capital of Prasenjita, and the wife was insistent that you have to come with me to welcome him, because it doesn't show culture, refinement, if you don't come. A man of the caliber of Gautama Buddha happens in millions of years. Kings and queens are a rupee a dozen. You can find them anywhere. They are not much worth. You will be forgotten. But Gautama Buddha's name will remain till the last man has become enlightened. And you may be remembered if you go to Gautama Buddha and touch his feet. Just this small act on your part will make you historical. And that is true. Who would have known about Prasenjita? There were hundreds other kings at that time, and we don't know anything about them. But Prasenjita is known. And because the wife was insistent, he said, okay. But I have to present something to him. He had a very beautiful diamond. Other kings were jealous about that diamond. Perhaps that was the best diamond in those days available. So he said that, what else I can offer to him? I will offer this diamond. The wife said, "You don't understand him. A diamond or a stone is equal to him. It will be better that you take a lotus flower. Because to him, lotus flower represents a revolution. It comes out of dirty mud. And it is the most beautiful flower on the earth, most fragrant, the biggest flower. It comes from the dirt, it crosses the water, and it stands on top of the water. This is a great revolution. They're turning into such a beautiful, so velvety are the flower leaves and petals that when dew drops in the night gather on the big petals and big leaves, they are so velvety that the water cannot touch them. They remain on the lotus leaves, but the lotus leaf remains untouched with them. The lotus flower remains in the water, but the water does not touch it. That gives it another significance, that a man should live in the world untouched by it. He should live in the world but not allow the world to enter in him. He should live in the dirty world, but he has the possibility of becoming a lotus flower. So lotus became a symbol for the transcendence from the trivial matters of the world. Gautam Buddha is represented in thousands of temples sitting on a lotus flower. That lotus flower is giving his philosophy. It has become a symbol. So she said it is better in our beautiful pond of the palace. I will find out the best, biggest lotus flower. You take the lotus flower. But the husband did not think that lotus flower has any value in comparison to his diamond, which can purchase a whole kingdom. So he said, "Okay, I will take both and I will see which he prefers." And this is my first meeting, so let me judge the man. He touched the feet of Buddha and wanted to give the great diamond, 10,000 disciples were present. They could not believe the radiance of the diamond, its clarity, purity, its perfection. And it was so great. There was complete silence, because everybody was watching what now Buddha is going to do, because it was against his disciplines to have anything more than 3 clothes, 1 begging bowl, that has to be the only possession for any sannyasi. Now what he is going to do? Is he going to refuse the king? That will be insulting. Are he going to accept it? But that will be against his discipline. So there was great silence and great curiosity, and Buddha saw the diamond and told Prasenjit, drop it. Very reluctantly he dropped, because now there was no way. He has presented and the man is saying, drop it. And under the impact of Buddha and those 10,000 people, in which there were nearly 24 people enlightened, he dropped the lotus, he dropped the diamond, and then he brought from another hand the lotus flower, thinking that perhaps my wife was right. Buddha said, drop it. He could not believe what kind of man he is. I have brought presents and he goes on saying, drop it. And third time, when he has dropped the lotus flower, his hands were empty, but Buddha said, loudly, drop it. He said, I don't have anything to drop. That was the moment when Mahakasyapa, for the first time in 20 years, started laughing madly. Prasenjit was very much offended, but Gautam Buddha called Mahakasyapa and gave him the lotus flower and told him that from you will start a totally new and unique, fresh stream. That fresh stream has developed into Zen, but it was born into the laughter of Mahakasyapa. Prasenjita said, I don't understand what is happening. Why this man laughed? Gautam Buddha said, he laughed because you could not understand my third request to drop. I wanted you to drop your ego. I am not concerned with lotus flowers, not concerned with diamonds. I am concerned with only one thing, your ego. Unless you drop it, you have not dropped anything. And I cannot accept your diamond or your lotus flower, because that will enhance and nourish your ego. That's why Mahakashyapa laughed, because that poor emperor does not understand the language of a mystic. But he understood it. In 10,000 sannyasins, he was the only one who understood it, what I mean. And he laughed. And I have chosen him to be the first. For a new stream of seekers, so he is the first founder of Zen, and Zen was founded in laughter. And the tradition for 25 centuries has continued to produce enlightened people. Most of the traditions have died, but it still brings flowers. Perhaps rooted in laughter, it is rooted in the highest consciousness. Anand Swabhava, Rabinovich sits down in a cafe and orders a glass of tea and a copy of Pravda. I will bring the tea, the waiter tells him, but I can't bring you a copy of Pravda. The Soviet regime has been overthrown, and Pravda is not published anymore. Pravda is the mouthpiece of the Communist Party of Soviet Union. All right, says Rabinovich, just bring me the tea. The next day, Rabinovich comes to the same cafe and asks for tea and a copy of Pravda. The waiter gives him the same answer. On the third day, Rabinovich again orders tea and Pravda. And this time the waiter says to him, look, sir, you seem to be an intelligent man. For the past 3 days you have ordered a copy of Pravda. And 3 times now I have had to tell you that the Soviet regime has been overthrown, and Pravda is not published anymore. I know, says Rabinovich, but I just like to hear it. Two Jews sat in a coffee house discussing the fate of their people. How miserable is our lot, said one. Pogroms, plagues, quotas, discrimination, and Adolf Hitler. Sometimes I think we would be better off if we had never been born. Sure, said his friend, but who has that much luck? Maybe 1 in 50,000. try to get it. It was at the office Krishna's party, as they lay on the office reception couch in the darkened room, their breath came hot and fast. Ah, Melvin, she said passionately, you have never made love to me like this before. Is it because of the holiday stretch? No, he panted. It is probably because I am not Maybelline. It is possible when you have a hearty laugh, mind stops, because mind cannot laugh. It is structured seriously. Its function is to be serious, miserable, sick. The moment you laugh, it does not come from your mind. It comes from the beyond, from your very inner spirit. According to me, all the religions have missed one of the dimensions of great importance, that is the direction of sense of humor. And they have made the whole world serious. I want my people to fill the world with laughter, joy, songs, and dances. We are not seeking for any paradise. We are seeking how to create the paradise here now, because we are not interested in things after death. If we can create a paradise here now, certainly we will be able, even if we meet in hell, to create a paradise there. All my people are condemned by all the religions, so I hope we will be reaching hell. But this are to be warned, that don't send my people to hell, because they will turn the hell in a far better paradise than you have with your old dirty and dry sins who cannot even smile. And I trust absolutely that when a million sannyasins will enter into hell with their guitars and songs and dances and jokes, the whole quality and the whole atmosphere of the hell is going to be changed. And I think even the devil will join. He will become a sannyasi. Swami Anand the devil.
Yes, Bhagwan.